Blog Talk Radio.
Caregivers at caregiversassist.com. We do have a Facebook group. It's a private Facebook support group where we have over 900 caregivers that share their trials, tribulations, tips, and anything they need to share.
That's wonderful. That's marvelous. We're going to get busy with the questions in a few moments, but I'd like to also welcome our co-host, Ms. P.J. Sampson, who just signed on. A moment. How you doing, P.J.?
I am so blessed, Gigi. I think I was kind of catching a little cold there, but I think I'm doing well now that I'm on the artist loft. I'm doing great.
I'm feeling well myself tonight, and we have the lovely Anna here, and of course we've got the very beautiful Miss Aileen Reese here tonight, and we're going to get busy and get jiggy with this, and we're going to get this party started. So, Aileen, I'm going to fire some questions at you for a moment. We're going to have a 15-minute break after this initial start time. So I'm going to ask you, Aileen, what is Caregivers Assist? And welcome back, by the way, to the show again.
Well, thank you so much. I'm so glad to be here and be able to share with you all. And Caregivers Assist was started about two and a half years ago in an attempt to help caregivers who are in the trenches every day, all day, taking care of their loved ones, doing a spectacular job, and at many times sacrificing their own health, their own jobs, their own well-being to take care of their loved ones. And Caregivers Assist does involve, I do have a website, but I also have, there are also over 900 caregivers on the Caregivers Assist Facebook group. It's a private group. So the caregivers can share personal information, and it's not broadcast on their Facebook page. It's kept private in our own Caregivers Assist Facebook support group, and they can discuss personal issues and get real caregivers who are going through the exact same thing.
Wow, that's amazing. It's a support group and all of that, all in one. So that's pretty interesting. Back to you, Anna.
Welcome back again. Thank you so much. It's an honor to be on the show tonight. My question tonight is basically, in networking, what's going on? Have you found that in different cities that there's no outreach for Alzheimer's or dementia or other states?
It's very difficult, and it is services do vary city by city, state by state. But there is money that comes out of Washington, D.C., and I myself have seen that all the money for elders comes out of Washington, D.C., and it all goes through the Area Agency on Aging and Disability offices. Everyone has them throughout the United States in their local areas. And all the money from D.C. comes through those offices. And I do notice a difference that for dementia and Alzheimer's, I do think they are getting more and more resources available. Just last week, a friend of mine who I encouraged to contact her local area agency on aging, and you have to call them and get assessed by them. She was trying to work, maintain her job. Her brother, who had very numerous health issues, was trying to take care of their mother and was not doing the greatest job. So she contacted this agency, and she was able to get 4 days of adult daycare for her mother. And we have a wonderful adult daycare center in my area, and normally it would be $70 a day. And with her income information, she only has to pay $40 a month through this Area Agency on Aging office. So I do think that more and more resources are being freed up and are being directed for dementia and Alzheimer's.
Wow, thank you. Back to you, Ms. Gigi.
Aline, this is PJ. I have a question to ask you. Can you hear me?
Hi, PJ. Yes, I can.
Welcome back as well. The question that I have is, what are some of the challenges with support?
It's very difficult because when you're in the trenches and taking care of your loved one every day, the support that you need is at the bottom of the list. And I recommend for all caregivers taking care of a loved one to seek emotional support, because in most cases, it does not come from family. You are not going to get it from your loved one. Your friends do not understand, so you have to get it from other caregivers. An excellent place, of course, is our Caregivers Assist Facebook support group, and that's an online group, and we're available 24/7. There are usually other caregivers there. Some of them, if they can't sleep, they're on. But I also recommend caregivers to seek out their local caregiver groups, depending on dementia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, any stroke. There's usually your local hospital or the newspaper will list the support groups available in your area. And I do recommend caregivers to find a local group as well as an online support group, because your emotional support is very important.
So the next question I want to ask is, like you were saying, that you may not get the help from a family member to help, but like you said, if you're having to reach out, but if the loved one that you're caring for desires and they can't really communicate with outside help more than they would their own children, and it makes it kind of difficult for caring for that person if it's somebody on the outside than the inside. Have you seen more situations like that? It's more combative and...
Yes, I do, and that's why I recommend caregivers to bring someone in sooner than later, because the person with Alzheimer's or dementia does gravitate, does trust, does depend on the main caregiver. But they can also develop a relationship with someone brought in from outside, say a formal caregiver that's paid, or say you do go through your area agency on aging and they send someone in for maybe twice a week to help with bathing. Bathing is huge. It's something that a home caregiver or a spouse is could be dangerous. But if you have a caregiver, a licensed CNA, that your area agency on aging has recommended to come in and help you with bathing, that a relationship needs to be formed with that person.
Yes.
Before,
yes.
Especially if it's a male and a female, you know, that relationship
yes.
needs to be made. And sure, you may find some resistance, but it's time. It's all, I call it the capital T. It's the time that once that aid comes in, they may not get a bath the first time. But once that person talks to them, learns their whole life story, that elder with dementia may not be able to tell them what they had for breakfast or lunch, but can describe where they lived, where they went to school as a child, what they did for their life. And once that trust is built because of the time spent, then usually a bond can be made, and that help you can get help from outside caregivers. And it all starts with the capital T, because the person, the family care member, the family caregiver, the 24/7 person must be able to get out and get a breath of fresh air. They must be able to go to their own doctor. They must be able to go out and get their hair cut. And those are things that can be done when the bathing aid is there. And the person with dementia can develop a trusting relationship enough so that they can get bathed, and then the 24/7 caregiver can get out of the house. Because one person cannot take care of another for 24/7. It's just too much.
Yeah, and that's how our situation is kind of set up now, where one person may be doing companionship, one person may be doing cooking, one person may be going and shopping. It does make it much easier. Even if you're taking a little break to go shopping, that gives you a little respite. The one other question that I have to ask you, but before I pass it over to Gigi, is, what are the challenges of trying to keep a loved one in a home that desires to stay in the home, but it begins to be difficult? What are those caregivers facing? I know, yeah.
It is very difficult because, according to AARP, you know, the Association of Retired Persons, 90% of all Americans want to age in place in their own home. And you can see where people want to stay in their own home. But it is challenging because in most cases there isn't anyone there to do the care. So that's the first challenge, is to get someone in to do the care, to get someone in to manage the care. And that caregiver, it requires some education on the part of the caregiver to be able to manage that care. But there are also challenges to keep that loved one engaged in the home. You can't just have someone coming in and fixing meals and cleaning the house. That loved one in the home needs to be engaged. They need to be given an opportunity to speak, or an opportunity to reminisce, an opportunity to do things.
But and that's a question that I do have to ask you, and is very, very important. Okay, everybody has their own profile. Some may like to do puzzles, and some may let me see what some may like to do. Most of it is the puzzles, and you might find a couple other things. But then you may have someone that may have arthritis or something, and they can't do the puzzles, or then they can't get on the computer and do the coloring book. You know, how do you deal with those other, because there are other special needs?
You always have to try to stay exactly one step ahead, and it's a constant challenge. Music is huge. People with cognitive memory issues, music just brings them alive, and not just any kind of music. You have to find the music that they like. It might be gospel. For another, it might be, I took care of a man, and he was in an assisted living. And every Wednesday morning, Salvation Army used to come in with old-time gospel song sheet and sang old-time gospel music. And finally, this man never got up in time. So finally, one Wednesday morning, he was up on time, and I was so excited because I wanted him to bring him out and, you know, listen to this music. Well, we got out, and he was like, what the heck is this? He did not like it at all. But he was a military man. So I finally found patriotic music, and that's what he loved. So it can be the old big band swing music. It can be country music. It can be gospel. There is some music that will trigger something in your loved one. You just have to find out what it is. And when all else fails, music and reminiscing are usually your fallback. Usually you can find pictures or something like that. But there's something about music that brings out, that just awakens something in those with cognitive and memory issues.
Well, if you have somebody that was before this had happened and they were really active in their life, and okay, music may come them for a little bit, but when they get to the point where they're not as active and they're used to that, and then they just start getting into stuff just like a child would or something like that, and that's the thing in trying to find something for the caregiver to keep them out of things that will in harm's way, because they're actually bored just like a child would be bored.
Right.
Because,
and that,
you know,
that
they used to getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning and going down at 6, and if you're just sitting there watching TV, you know, it's okay, you're going to get into something. Yeah.
Right. And you always you have to keep your hands busy. Even if it's, I spoke with someone last week, and they gave their husband plastic shower rings, you know, looped together in like a 4 or 5 shower rings, something that they can hold and manipulate. A lot of women like to hold baby dolls. There are online and on Etsy, there are a lot of fidget blankets or fidget aprons where you can open and close a button, or there are different textures. When I go visit a man in the nursing home, I like to bring them something they can hold, like a Nerf football, one of those squishy balls, something with some texture, something that they can manipulate. But I understand what you mean. As caregivers, you can't just think that, oh, well, I'm going to go take care of this lady and I'm going to sit and watch the TV with her. Well, a TV is not going to keep them engaged. You have to stay one step ahead of the game and keep them engaged. You know, keep them watching something, feeling something, like hard candy. Fill their senses, you know, their taste with a Werther's or a peppermint. their hearing with music, their touch with a squishy ball, you know, and their eyes with reminiscing with pictures. That's the way I like to do it, with their senses. Keep all of their senses filled or occupied. And that's a good way of doing it.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That is
back over to you, Gigi.
Can you hear me, Aileen? I'm having a little bit of
difficulty.
Yes,
I can.
All right, thank you.
I can
hear
you, Gigi.
Okay, thank you. I wanted to ask you a couple of questions, but we're going to take a brief break and come back for a moment. And just wanted to toss over to you about caregivers and the stressful moments that they go through. What you just answered for PJ, you know, as far as keeping your loved ones occupied with different things, because they are like touch and feel and all this stuff. But we'll be right back, and I'll have a couple of questions to ask you. So sit back and relax. Take your shoes off. Enjoy the sound.
Born of a virgin, born in Bethlehem. Where I send thee, how shall I send thee? Two for Paul and Silas, one for the little baby, born of the virgin Mary. Born in Bethlehem. Where I send thee. Children, born in Bethlehem.
Children, go where I send thee.
How shall I send thee?
Of course, it wasn't in its entirety, but we will get back to that song before we go leave the show tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Artist Loft. This is your radio host, Gigi Adams-Evans, along with my co-host, PJ Sampson and Anna Marie Holiday. And our very special repeated guest is Ms. Aileen Reese with CaregiversAssist.com. Thank you for joining in. That number to call in is 646-200-3817. Again, that's 646-200-3817. So we're back on track again, and I think my mic is up. And Anna, I didn't hear you the first time, so I do apologize. Now we're back to Aileen. So I was dancing, by the way, trying to feel better with that song. That's one of my favorites. So, Aileen, I'd like to ask you, I know that you are from a long line of caregivers, and you have a generation of caregivers that date all the way back to the 30s. But I had a very, very special question to ask you about caregivers themselves. You know that caregivers are always dealing with dementia and everything, but how can caregivers do something for themselves? Because they need support as well. On your webpage, is there anything there that would help them to keep themselves up? Because their hands are really full. There's a general task. Spiral down with that dementia or Alzheimer's. It's going to get a little bit tedious there, you know, running after a toddler sometimes almost. So what do you suggest? What do caregivers need to do to help to support themselves?
I do recommend, and I've talked about it earlier, it's a great question, Gigi, about the offices of the Area Agency on Aging, because they will help, they will supply help into the home, and it cannot be done by yourself. So you have to have the help. You have to have help so you can go, you can get your break. And it's all not only just to get a breath of fresh air for yourself, but it's well documented that caregivers after years of care, because usually the Alzheimer's and dementia is anywhere between 5 and up to 20 years sometimes, it's very wearing on someone, not only emotionally, but physically. And many of the caregivers sacrifice their own health and well-being. And they have to realize, and they have to realize early, that it cannot be done on their own. And I do recommend people from the very beginning, once they even think their loved one may have dementia or Alzheimer's, to start putting in a community in place. And it's got to start with your family, friends, neighbors, and help from the area agency. And then, may, as time goes by, formal or paid caregivers. But the help cannot, it's not all going to come from one place. It's got to come from everyone. And the caregiving situations that are the best and the most successful, and what I mean by best, they're best for the loved one with the Alzheimer's or dementia, and best for the main caregiver, are those that caregiving responsibilities are shared with numerous people, volunteers, friends, neighbors, and family. And truly, that is the best situation. That is the most, that is the, everyone needs to strive for a successful caregiving situation, caregiving community for their loved ones.
Right. Thank you, because that was a question that was tweeted to me a moment ago. I do know that you had already answered it earlier in the question, but that was from Ms. Jacqueline Ellis. She says to wish her mother-in-law happy birthday today. She turned 100 years old today. And she is a combative person with dementia. So my heart goes out to her. And thank you, Jackie, for tweeting me and asking the question. Aileen, I have one more question for you, and I have another question for you from another person.
Let me just say hi to Jackie for just a second. And
all right.
100 seems startling, but it's not. 90 is the new 70, and we are going to hear more and more of more people living into their hundreds. But I want to wish her mother a happy birthday, and I want to encourage Jackie, because when we make the commitment to take care of our loved ones, once they are combative, we know that our mother doesn't want to be combative, and we know that caring for them in a combative state is not good for us, and it's not good for them. So that is the time when we need to have that log. We need to write down incident for incident, hour by hour, minute by minute, exactly what is happening, and we need to make sure we are going to a qualified geriatric neurologist, a neurologist, someone that will help us and help our loved one get to the point where they can be managed and it can be a safe caregiving situation. Because when our loved one is combative and we are the caregiver, we're their only hope. That's it. If we can't get help through a doctor, through medicine, they're not going to get it anywhere else. And they don't want to be acting like this, and it makes it very difficult for us to care for them when they are combative. One thing I always tell people, the first thing to look for when people are combative is pain. Because with Alzheimer's and dementia, it's very difficult for our loved ones to communicate with us. And with combativeness, they are trying to say something.
Yeah.
You know, they are trying. Yeah. You know, their pain might be the bottom of it. They may not understand what's happening. There's something's going on there, and it does need an intervention by a qualified physician, neurologist.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Aileen, for that answer. And she's also tweeting me back to say thank you. She has one more, and then I'm going to turn it over to Anna. She says that although her mother-in-law is combative, she has a problem with her. And this is kind of funny, but it's not funny in a way. But she says she has a problem with her keeping on her clothes. And what can she do to do that? She gets naked, and, you know, with a lot of people in the house that she's in, she has to protect her privacy. What can she do to do that?
Yes, and it's almost childlike. And you remember when you had that girl that was 2, 3, 4 years old, that they would go in their room and change clothes often, over and over. And you don't know what it is. It may be she may be uncomfortable in the brief. She may be uncomfortable with what she's wearing. You just don't know. One thing I would recommend is checking her brief usually every 2 hours. But if she has this incident, you might want to do it every hour and just make sure she's not wet and make sure she's not uncomfortable. And she just needs to be kept busy. She needs to be, it's like when you had that 2 year old and you thought, oh, everything's too quiet. And then you walked into your bedroom and sure enough, the marker was all over the wall, or the toilet paper was all over the bathroom. You know, they do have to be supervised more than we realize it. And that's where this help comes in. Even if it's a neighbor, a friend, someone from the area agency has to keep them occupied. Even if it's a neighbor that takes a walk down the street every day anyway, can come and take them for a walk. You know, it can just be someone that, you know, just a neighborhood person or a neighbor friend that can stop by and just for half an hour sit down and read with them or play music with them. And it's just a half an hour here or half an hour there, or the aide coming in and helping them bathe. It's all those times put together, which is what keeps our sanity. That's our only method of keeping sane, is putting together the help that we need, piece by piece.
Piece by piece, I know. Thank you so much, Aileen. She thanks you in her tweet. Back to you, Anna.
I am certainly enjoying the show on tonight. Thank you so much. My question, actually I have a couple, but one, are you an author?
Author?
Yes, have you written any books on this subject?
And I'm really praying about that, because I do feel like I have a lot to share. And time-wise, I do have a lot of inspiration, and I have written on certain things, maybe that could be a chapter here or a chapter there. And I have taught a caregiving class in town, and it's been an 8-week class, so I feel like I've got like almost 8 chapters. But I'm just saying, okay, Lord, if you want this to be a book, you're gonna have to do it, because between my mom and my family, and I appreciate the question, because it's inspirational to me, and I do feel like there are a lot of caregivers that do need some inspiration and could use some tips, and I'd love to be an author someday. It's a dream, Anna.
Well,
thank you so much.
I think there's a good book somewhere in you, and I pray one day that you're able to write it. The information is so enlightening to someone myself that's learning more and more about this every day, and the issue and/or subject is becoming so big all over now. So hopefully one day I'm able to go into the stores or Amazon and find your book. It will certainly be enlightening. My second question is, okay, you talked about Washington, D.C., and the money being there for this program, but is there a grant that one can write and present it to Washington, D.C., or their city? For example, I used to work for a group home, and we found out after doing some studies that a sensory room for the children that were having issues with just behavioral issues, we found out that the sensory room was a place where they can kind of like let down their hair and then come back into a different environment, whether it lasted for an hour or two, but we found that there was a calmness there. So is there a grant that one can present to Washington for something of that sort?
I'm sure there are. I know exactly what you're talking about. My daughter teaches in Boca Raton, and she teaches autistic children, and they have a sensory room, and it's awesome. So I know exactly what you're talking about, and I do see a lot of sensory issues with people with dementia and Alzheimer's. Especially with touch, hearing, taste, and I do think that it could be used in a very similar way with adults as it is for children. All the grants that the Area Agency on Aging, I know they get a lot of their money from grants. The only grants I know that caregivers can register for is the Hilarity for Charity, and it's hilarityforcharity.com, and caregivers can download the application and submit it for caregiving help. And one of the criteria is you have to be helping your loved one in the home with, I believe it's dementia, and the awards are for caregiving, and they will send it through Home Instead. So once you get the award, the aides come from Home Instead, and they will give you a certain amount of hours per quarter that the aide will come and take care of your loved one so you can go and do your shopping, go to the doctor, anything you need to do. And that's the only grant that I know of for caregivers right now. But I'm sure there are many more grants, like you're talking about, through DC for sensory things like that, but I'm not aware of them specifically. But anyone on that is listening to us right now that is taking care of a loved one with dementia in their home, please go to hilarityforcharity.com. You can download the application and submit it. And several people from our Caregivers Assist support group online have been awarded quarterly hours for caregiving. It's a wonderful program.
That's very good.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. PJ?
I wanted to ask you, Aline, do you ever suggest to your caregivers to maybe go to the same doctor as their loved one? Because sometimes some things are unnoticed that the caregiver goes through. At one point in time, I did attend a had a physician with the same doctor that my mother had, which kind of they monitored me as well as monitor my mother, which made the process a little bit easier.
It does, and it is handy, and it just makes for a better relationship because, you know, he can, like, just lay another set of eyes, you know, on both of you at the same time, or you can even make your appointment at the same time, and they can do both of you, you know, one visit right after the next. It's very dicey going to the doctor, though, because I always recommend people, right? It's hard. You don't want to talk about your loved one in front of them and tell you know, the doctor about their shortcomings or, you know, how their memory is, fading. And
usually it would be at a separate appointment or something like that, say, if you went with the loved one, but then when you went by yourself, you were still with the same doctor, but at a separate time.
Right. Right. And it is handy to do it that way. And it would be a benefit for probably both of you, but taking your loved one to the doctor is just difficult because it just puts you in a position where, you know, you may have to talk about things in front of them that you don't want to, but it's always convenient. It just gives you another time to see the doctor and lets both of you get to know that doctor even more. And
What are some other ways to be able to monitor? Because sometimes the caregiver is silent. If there is really no support, what are the suggestions to be there? Because they say that the caregiver can may leave if they don't take care of themselves, before the loved one. So what is another way to make sure, because the loved one most of the time put theirself on the back burner?
Right. You're talking about the loved one with dementia isn't taking proper care of themselves?
No. The caregiver, if they're not, because their voice is silent majority of the time because they have to put themselves on the back burner, what suggestions do you have to make sure that they're getting the support? Because they might not get the support, but they just have to do what they have to do. No one else is coming.
And many of them are not going to see the doctor. So at least if they make a doctor's appointment for both of their loved one and them, at least they'll get their doctor's appointment in. Because many loved ones, like you say, put their care on the back burner and don't even see a doctor. So the best way I would recommend is making the appointments together. And then at least the caregiver is being seen by a doctor, because it's very well documented, that the self-care of caregivers is very lacking.
Absolutely. I appreciate that. Thank you. Back over to you, Gigi.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you, Aileen, for that answer. That was very informative, because I'm getting tweets from certain people. They're listening in to the show. I would encourage you guys to call in 646-200-3817. Of course, you can tweet me, as you've been doing, GG1015 on Twitter. But tonight we have a very special guest, a repeating guest, Ms. Aileen Reese. And she is a caregiver. She's a geriatric caregiver. And as you all know, caring for a loved one with Alzheimer's or dementia can be very exhausting and isolating, especially for the caregivers. Family caregivers are often juggled around so many, many times, as Aileen has already expressed in answers tonight. And they have careers, oftentimes they work, so they need people to help them, to support them, and families to really be there for them to take on very important roles. Many times in our lives, we find, some people as caregivers find, that they're abandoned, they're left alone, you know, in a social life that they can't seem to work all by themselves, so their health is in jeopardy, as it was answered tonight and discussed tonight. A lot of times, you know, they're doing things that they shouldn't be doing, and you're running around like a chicken with your head cut off sometimes, out of love, of course, not out of frustration, because they don't know what they're doing. But to give that love, support, and understanding, go to www.caregiversassist.com and read what Aileen Roos has to say about how you as a caregiver can help, how you can connect with that loved one that you're taking care of, especially when you're in the home. So remember, 646-200-3817 is the number to call in. We'll be here until 8:30. And we look forward to your calls, and thank you for your tweets. We'll answer them accordingly, but we do encourage you to call in. Again, 646-200-3817, and address your questions to Aileen, DJ, Anna, for that matter, but we do really appreciate your support. Aileen, I wanted to ask you a question. Well, it's two questions I have. The first question is, in what cases is long-term care covered by insurance for people suffering with dementia or Alzheimer's? Is it basically something that's done in the home, or can it be done inside the home, or does it have to be in a facility?
Long-term care is a very difficult issue. And I think most people, when they become caregivers, everyone assumes that Medicare or something, somebody, somewhere, pays for long-term care. And that's probably a very big surprise to most people, that Medicare, which is the insurance that you pay into every year that as you work, and then when you're 65, become eligible for Medicare benefits. And it does pay for your doctor's care. It pays for the Part D, pays for your prescriptions. And after a hospital visit, it does pay for rehab, and it does pay for home care. After you come home from the hospital or rehab, home health is paid for by Medicare. But long-term care, once you get to the point where you cannot take care of yourself, that is not paid for by anyone, basically. The only long-term care insurance, which it's very expensive, but it does pay for long-term care, and in most cases it will pay for in a facility like a nursing home, or it will pay for care in the home. The only other entity that pays for long-term care is the VA. And they pay they have a program that's aid and attendance for people who are veterans or have been in the military. aid in attendance will help with long-term care. But in most cases, people, when they need skilled care in a nursing home, I believe the rate is 70% of those in nursing homes that need skilled care are on Medicaid. And that mm-hmm. is when you need skilled care and are not able to pay for. Now, nursing homes, a skilled care nursing home costs about $7,000 a month.
Wow.
So it does not take long for most people to go through their savings to get to where they would have to go on Medicaid to pay for skilled nursing care.
I see.
One,
we have another caller, Aileen, from 817 Exchange, same area you're in. Hello, caller, and thank you for calling in. You'd like to identify yourself? Hello, caller. Okay, I think
hello.
Yes, hello. How are you tonight?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me. My name is Maxine.
Hi, Maxine. Do you have a question for Aileen?
No, I'm just gaining a lot of information right now, taking a lot of notes.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you for stay tuned in with us and keep taking your notes because this is a very informative program tonight with Ms. Aileen Roos of Caregivers Assist. Aileen, I have one more question for you before I turn it over to Anna. Do all caregivers really have to place their loved ones in a facility? Because I've noticed that, you know, through over the years in my own family, sometimes it's necessary because there's nowhere else for the person to go because, you know, of income for another, and they have to be placed in that facility. But for those that don't have to place their loved ones in that facility, you were talking about the $7,000 a month. Were you speaking of that as far as being in a facility or outside of a facility?
That's in a facility. And not everyone has to go into a nursing home. Not everyone needs skilled care in a nursing home. And there are Medicaid programs. PACE is one of them. And all the Medicaid, it's very difficult to speak about because every state is different. But I encourage everyone to look into their state programs through the Area Agency on Aging and find out what the Medicaid programs are. Many states have home-based care where your loved one can stay in the home because if the state is paying for Medicaid and it does behoove the states to keep someone at home rather than pay $7,000 a month. So a lot of Medicaid programs are helping with families with supplies and helping families with aides to come in the home and to keep the loved one in the home. So I do encourage everyone to find out what their state programs are. And I don't really have an agenda on which is better because some people fail to thrive at home and are better in a facility where their meals are scheduled and they have meals served to them and they're on a schedule and they thrive better in a facility. Whereas, like I said, 90% of all Americans want to age in their home, and some of them have a family and want to stay in their home. And as long as they're, like I said, not bored, staying engaged, have good nutrition through meals, staying engaged and get good care at home, then that's a good place for them. It's very individual, and it's up to the person and up to the family.
I see. Thank you. And, you know, a lot, too, and I'm going to turn it over to Anna. You know, it's amazing because I've been talking to some people, you know, off and on through the radio series that I've had for a while. And with this dementia program that we're doing, the dementia movement, I found out that consequently a lot of them have chronic conditions, you know, such as heart disease and cancer and diabetes. It occurs in the, and it occurs at a very, it's what, it doubles the rate, so to speak, among family caregivers. Do you have any input you'd like to give to that statement, Aileen?
Well, there are, I think, 140 different kinds of dementia, and some of them are diabetes-related dementia, alcohol-related dementia. So there are, and a lot of people have, like, the comorbidities that you're talking about, which is diabetes plus dementia or Alzheimer's. And
mm-hmm.
it just does make those of us that are learning about this go lose that 20, 30 extra pounds we're walking around with, you know, exercise, get the diet. And the other than diet and exercise, the new third thing is sleep, to make sure we're getting enough sleep at night. And that's very important for our brain health, so to say.
Exactly. Thank
yeah.
you, Amy.
Yeah. My new motto is, the best health care is not needing the health care.
Exactly. I do so agree with that. Thank you so much. And ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to The Artist Loft. Your radio host, Gigi Adams-Evans, along with my co-host, PJ Sampson, and Anna Marie Holliday. I'm going to turn the mic back over to Anna. Anna?
Again, thank you so much. My question is, for those that are listening and have questions concerning early signs of the dementia or Alzheimer's, and are there stages that they go through? Like, is there a phase, stage one, stage two?
And there are, and I love that question. And the first part I'm going to answer first. When you think a loved one is when they are displaying little signs of memory issues, it's and of course you start getting nervous and you're afraid they might have dementia or Alzheimer's. You always want to start with your family physician, because dementia mimics diabetes, depression, medicine side effects, many. Dehydration, and we would never want, those are preventable conditions, and we would never want someone diagnosed with dementia or Alzheimer's when it could be something so preventable. So start with your doctor, and then make sure all of that is ruled out, and then you want to go to a medical memory disorder clinic or a memory clinic. They're usually affiliated with a university hospital or a university research center. In every geographical location in the United States is assigned a memory disorder clinic. You just have to find out which one is for you. And just this week, friends of families came out of just a regular family doctor with a diagnosis of dementia and a medication, and they were wondering how they were going to get his car keys away. Just the sweetest man. They went over to the next city to the memory care clinic, found out he was suffering from complications of diabetes and
mm-hmm.
not the Alzheimer's that had been diagnosed by the family physician. So I beg of everyone, make sure you go to a qualified memory clinic or a memory disorder clinic for a dementia diagnosis. It's so important.
Exactly. That's part of her website too, ladies and gentlemen. You can go into www.caregivers.com to read all the information that helps you as a caregiver to learn more about your position as a caregiver, to learn the signs of whether a person has dementia or not, even though you can't diagnose it, it's said that you can't diagnose it. Sometimes it's not often found until that person leaves the world. But
exactly.
Do pay attention, and please go over. I encourage you to go over to www.caregivers.org. There's so much information there that you can learn that Eileen has placed on her website, so much to assist you. So you're listening to The Artist Loft, and again, this is your radio host, Gigi Adams-Evans, and, of course, my co-host, Miss Anna Marie Holliday. We've lost PJ for family emergency, so she'll be back on, hopefully. She'll be back on before we leave the show. But, Aileen, I'd like to know, once a person has actually been diagnosed with it, I know you answered it before, but I'm getting tweets, so we have to re-ask the questions all over again, some of them. But once they're actually diagnosed with Alzheimer's or dementia, and you already spoke about the stages that Anna asked you about, how long does it take for the spiral down of the stages that it has? Is it a year, 2 years, a month, 6 months? How long does that take?
Well, I will address the stages. Stages of Alzheimer's, there are 1 through 10 on ALZ.org. And many people expect their doctor to diagnose a stage, and most doctors don't. They will diagnose Alzheimer's. They'll diagnose Lewy body dementia. They'll diagnose frontal lobe dementia, but they don't actually diagnose a stage. As a family member, it does give you great comfort to go read all those stages, and your loved one will not be in one. They will be displaying symptoms of maybe stage 2, 3, and 4, you know, or maybe 5, 6, and 7. It's all, everyone progresses at a different rate. And most of the average that you take care of a loved one with dementia can be 4 to 5 years, but it can be up to 20 years. But I recommend to once a family does get a diagnosis of Alzheimer's, especially if they're in the stages 1, 2, and 3, they are displaying memory, cognitive issues, forgetting things. But if they are in good enough health, I recommend people to take that bucket list out. If you've talked about, going on that Alaska cruise, or you've talked about taking your loved one, back to visit family and friends, somewhere where you used to live, I recommend taking that trip and doing what you always wanted to do, and cross off some things on that bucket list, because there will be times when they get to some of the later stages, when they become incontinent, say, it's very difficult to travel and do things. But in the first few stages, and maybe the first, maybe 5 to 7 years, when, they're able to go and enjoy family and enjoy friends and enjoy traveling, I recommend people go ahead and do it. That's when you want to do it. You also want to prepare by, putting the bars in your bathroom, making your, if you live in a house where you don't have a tub downstairs and all your bedrooms are upstairs, you may want to move to a patio home, or you may want to get to a place where you're around family, just to make it easier. But I don't recommend people feeling like once they get the Alzheimer's donation that they're like, once they get the Alzheimer's diagnosis, that their life is over. There are many, many joyful times and joyful family time and many years ahead of you that are good.
Yes, yes, I do agree. I do agree. Thank you so much, and it's a joy having you here on the show again. Back to you, Anna.
Thank you. My question is, I have two, but I'll give them to you one at a time. Do you feel that it's traumatizing, or is it important to explain to your loved one what is going on if they're in the first stage where they're still at a capability of understanding?
It depends on your loved one. And I have read that 5% of those with the disease understand about it, and the other 50 will never. So it depends on your loved one. If your loved one can handle it and your loved one understands it, knows what it is, I'm not sure if I told you the last time when I was on, there's a lovely couple. They're very intellectual. They read a lot. They watch videos about Alzheimer's and dementia. And when he introduces her, she will, and she's the one with dementia, she will turn to him and say, "Do they know that I have Alzheimer's?" She knows that she has it. But there are other people that can't handle it. And those that cannot handle it, I wouldn't bother them with it. The name of the game when you are taking care of one with dementia, Alzheimer's, any kind of dementia, is keeping their anxiety level down. So anything that would increase their level of anxiety, you just don't want to go there. You just figure out some other way around it. You know, you can just some other way.
Thank you. The second question is the memory clinic. Do you know that whether or not if Medicare pays for that?
Yes, they would.
Okay.
Yes, they
great.
Would. You would need to call them. They may or may not require a referral from your GP, your general practitioner. You may need to find out about that. But usually it's a three-part process. You call the memory clinic, make the appointment, and you go in the first time, and you answer questions with the geriatric neurologist or someone who's qualified in diagnosing dementia. And they usually take quite a while to do some assessments, talk about different things with the family. Then they will request lab work, because they want to rule out everything, you know, like I talked about before, diabetes, dementia, any side effects from drugs. They want to rule everything out. And then the third appointment is usually when you go in for the diagnosis, and they will, you know, talk to you and tell you. And it's important because as a loved one, there's a big difference between frontal lobal, temporal, you know, and Lewy body and Alzheimer's. Every one of these types of dementia affects different parts of your brain, and it displays different symptoms. And part of caring for one with dementia, you have to stay one step ahead of the game. And some of them are more prone to paranoia and delusions, and you just want to be prepared as best you can. And that's one thing that I said, once you find out your loved one does have dementia, you want to go on trips and do what you want to do, but you also want to study as much as you can and learn as much as you can about the disease. And you want to get as much support as you can from your local support groups and online support groups. And you want to keep your friends, keep your family. You want to start building that community of care that's going to help you get through the next, you know, 5, 10, 15 years.
Exactly.
Back to you, Ms. Gigi. Thank you, Arlene.
Thank you, Anna, so much. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to The Artist Voice, and we have a very special guest tonight, Ms. Aileen Reese, and she's a caregiver herself. And Aileen, I have a question for you, but I'd like to interject this information back that you've already spoken about, because I have another tweet asking about the hilarity for charity. And Aileen had spoke about that, and it's a homestead, it's kind of a home instead of senior care program, Hilarity for Charity, and it teamed up last year with the Alzheimer's and Dementia Care Relief Grant Program to help families caring for loved ones with dementia. Now, this program provides grants to families in the United States and Canada, as she has mentioned, for in-home care by professional caregivers who are experienced and trained to care for individuals with dementia. Aileen also stated that you can go to, I believe it's, let me take my notes, www.helpforalzheimersfamilies.com. That's one of them, www.helpforalzheimersfamilies.com, to apply for the Alzheimer's and Dementia Care Relief Grants Program, and you can explore other resources. That if you go to her website, you'll find a plethora of information there, and you can just dive in and read, and even read about Aileen when she was, you know, she's taking care of her mom right now, as a matter of fact, as a fantastic caregiver. And I say that even though I'm not in her home, because of her attitude and her engaging love for helping others. So, Aileen, with that having said that, what are some of the worst fears that a caregiver can have? I know we spoke about that on the last show, but would you like to re-answer that question for our listeners tonight?
Sure. I'm sure all caregivers, you know, they're up at night wondering what's going to happen when, you know, is the day going to come when I'm not able to take care of my loved one? And are they going to have to be placed? And, you know, just the big, you know, all those overwhelming questions. And what I recommend for caregivers to seek,
Okay, I think we may have lost her for a moment. Aileen, are you still there? Okay, ladies and gentlemen. I'm sure she'll reconnect in a moment. That was Ms. Aileen Reese. She is also a expert caregiver. She's with www.caregivers.com. And, of course, she's a caregiver herself, you know, taking the challenges with her mom every day. And we're asking you to call in for support, 2646-200-3817. As I mentioned before, she's also a caregiver. And with that having said, if you're a person that is a caregiver that has an individual with dementia, there are so many other programs that you can go to for help in order to get relief and some financial assistance, you know, helping you in that. She's back now. Hi, Aileen. Thank you for reconnecting.
Hi. Sorry. Yes, talking about the greatest fears of caregivers. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can hear you just fine.
One thing I like to tell caregivers that a placement is a big fear, but most caregivers see placement as a failure. And I want them to understand that placement is not a failure, but there may become a day that the care that they're able to provide for their loved one exceeds the care that their loved one needs. And if you are, you know, 99 pounds and your husband is 250 pounds and he can no longer get from the bedroom to the bathroom, you know, that his level of care exceeds the level that you can give him. So I want caregivers to understand that if their loved one does need placement, it's not their failure. It is a time where if placement does happen, they are still in charge of the care of their loved one, even though they are in a facility. And it doesn't mean just because your loved one is in a facility, there is still plenty for you to do. And it's almost just as exhausting to be running back and forth to a facility, doing laundry, making sure your loved one has what they need. You are still in charge of their care. And even though they're in a facility, you never want to never let the facility make you think otherwise, because you are in charge of their care. You know what they like. You know what they need. They need you, and you need them to do the care, but you still to be there for them. And actually, it's a chance for you to maybe take off that caregiver hat and maybe get to put your wife or daughter hat back on. And maybe
right.
you can, become the wife and the daughter again. And your loved one needs that just as much.
Yeah.
So
yep.
I do recommend that caregivers that are very worrisome about this to look at the resources in their area, to keep their options open, especially those that have made promises, say spouses, 30, 40, maybe 50 years ago, they're both in their 30s, and they're like, oh, honey, I never want to go to a nursing home, and you're, oh, yeah, we're never going to go to a nursing home. Well, here you are 50 years later, you're in your 80s, and you're not able to take care of your loved one like you could have 50 years ago.
Exactly.
And I always tell them that those promises, you cannot keep, those promises are not realistic. And anyone that feels like they have to abide by something like that, or even for their parent, a lot of people say, well, I promised my dad, I promised my mom that I would take care of them. Well, if you need back surgery, you ruined your back from taking care of this person, and you just physically can't do it anymore, you have to look at other options, and it doesn't mean that you're a failure.
Exactly. Thank you so much. Anna, back to you.
Yes, can you tell us some of the tricks that you might use for your loved ones in trying to give them a shower or a bath if they don't want one, or clean their dentures and give them medicine?
Sure,
great question.
Sure. And there are a lot of them. I call them strategies, and I did do a webinar once. It was 50 ways to bathe your mother, and there are strategies that you can bathe your loved one, and you can get them to take their medicine and do things that they may not want to do, but you have to be sly, and you have to be cunning sometimes. And just because to get someone bathed and sanitary does not mean they have to go into a shower and have water splashed on them. Bathing involves wet and being cold, and most loved ones do not like that. So there are a lot of ways where, starting from the feet, you can, those pans from the hospital where you soak their feet during the afternoons during TV, you can get their feet soaked. And I use a wipe between, once they've soaked their feet, I use a wipe between their toes to, get everything nice and clean. And then dry them with a nice fluffy towel, make sure they're nice, thoroughly dried. And when they're sitting there with their feet soaked, you can get their legs, at least up to the knee, And then when you have to be sometimes wise about getting into the bathroom when they're in the bathroom, but that's the best way to do their private parts. And often you can get a soapy or a nice warm washcloth and give them a washcloth, and let them do their private areas, and then you do the back. you know, and if they are not so keen about it, you can get that warm washcloth and you start up on their back. And who does not want their back rubbed with a nice warm washcloth? You know, and you just start from the back and you just keep going down, down, down until you can get the private part in the back. So then you've got, you know, practically the back down, you know, and then the hopefully if they do, you can give them a nice warm washcloth to have them do their face. And, you know, who doesn't like a nice, you know, warm washcloth on their face? And while they're doing that, you can all, you know, the main thing is to keep them busy, you know, while they're doing what they can do, then you do what you can do. You know, sometimes you could pop a little hard candy in their mouth because you want to keep their senses full, their hands full with a warm washcloth, their mouth full with a peppermint or a Werther's, and then maybe you can be doing their under their arms and around their neck. And, you know, there are ways you can do this. And the same thing, remember Madge used to soak the fingers in the getting the manicure? The same thing when they're washing TV, get that basin with nice warm soapy water and soak their hands, especially this time of the year when people are susceptible to flu and you want to keep everything sanitary. Soak those hands in a nice, warm, soapy water. And that's a good way to get their fingernails clean at the same time. You know, so you can bathe someone from the top of their head down to their toes without soaking them in a shower. While they're up to the vanity or on the toilet, you can get that warm, soapy wash rag and get their hair, get their head. You know, put shampoo on it. These days you can also, at any drugstore, you can get dry shampoo.
Yeah.
And you can, it comes in a spray, and you can do a dry shampoo. So there are a lot of different ways. But the main thing is keeping their senses, their hands with busy while you do what your part, you know. And it's keeping them clean, keeping them sanitary, not necessarily soaking them in a shower or, you know, making them take a tub, you know, getting in the tub. And if you have to do it piece by piece, you know, area by area over a few days, that's fine. Those in nursing homes, sometimes they're showered maybe twice a week. So if you can get your loved one, you know, get them bathed, you know, from head to toe, you know, two or three times a week, you know, you're there. You're doing just fine. And the main thing is you don't want to make a fight about it. And the worst thing you can do is greet your loved one in the morning and say, "Oh, today we're getting in the shower," or "Today's shower day." Forget it. It's not going to happen. You've just ruined your day, and you've ruined their day.
Thank you. That was very challenging. But yes, I've been there. We had loved ones in the family with Alzheimer's and dementia. So that was one of the tricks that we were taught by the. The trainers that were there at the house, of the caregivers that were there at the house at the particular time. But I'd like to ask you, we do have PJ back now, so welcome back, PJ. I'd like to ask you about people that work who are caregivers. How do they handle that with their employees, Aileen?
It's so difficult, and that my heart goes out to those. And I work, too. I have a geriatric care practice where I have six people that I take care of that they don't have loved ones near, or some of them do, and I just help the families. So I'm working. I have my mom that I help take care of. I have my husband and three children, and, you know, they're in school. So, you know, these poor people, you know, I'm one of them, you know, we have to keep all these plates spinning, and we have to, you know, keep everybody covered and everybody satisfied. And if most caregivers are female or age 45 to 65, and most of them are working full time. So
yeah.
They work full time and then they come home, and the statistics show that they spend over 20 hours a week caregiving. So those are the people that have my heart. And they really need to have a backup plan to their backup plan. They need to have be on these online support groups to be able to figure out how to make it through the day. They need to have everything on autopilot as much as they can. Like their loved one, you know, all the bills, all the, you know, as much as you can done automatically, you know, through bank draft, have all the prescriptions on, so they're mailed on mail. Standing in line at a pharmacy or running to the doctor trying to get a prescription or on the phone to a doctor trying to get a prescription. All this must be automated. And the worst thing about the working caregivers is they are afraid to let their employers know, because who doesn't want to go to work every day and want to be in line for a promotion, to be in line for, you know, the next job that they, you know, they've been working towards, you know, the next level in their career. And if your loved one, you're so afraid that your boss or your employer is going to think, oh, well, they have to take care of their mother or their dad has Alzheimer's, you know, they can't take this new job, or, you know, they don't deserve this promotion. So most caregivers, it's the big secret. Their caregiving responsibilities are a big secret. So they need all the emotional support that they can get, because they're not getting it at work and they're not getting it at home. Actually, they're going to work for their break. That's when they get their big break. That's their rest.
Yeah, I agree. It's a different environment for a moment. Yes, I do so agree with that. Well, we're 28, we're 88. We're about to shut down in about maybe 2 minutes. And PJ is back, and I wanted to know if you have any questions left in the last remaining 2 minutes for Aileen.
Aileen, yes, I do have a question to ask you. Do you have very many caregivers that maybe fear this diagnosis happening to them, especially if it's hereditary already? They've seen it already. Have you any caregivers came to you with that fear?
I do, and I have many, and mostly they're children of the parents that I've taken care of, and they are very concerned. But I have not read anything that confirmed that it is hereditary. In many families, it's very clear often when they know their grandparents had it, and now they see their parents with it. So, and that's when they need to do what we talked about earlier. You know, get that weight off right, exercise, get sleep, keep themselves engaged themselves. And that, it seems, from everything I've read, seems to be the best hope, is to just keep yourself in good health.
Absolutely. I don't know, this question may have already been answered way down the road, but what gave you the passion to want to help so many caregivers? Because I know when someone, especially me, if I ask you a question, you're right there. And I know in that private group, you have so many people asking questions, and you're right there. And then plus you also have your clients, you have your own family to tend to, you have the webinars. What was your, as I say, the purpose-driven, what drove you to this?
I can't tell you any one thing. Of course, it was in my family. You know, my dad grew up farm in Ireland with his aunt upstairs in the 30s. He was sent upstairs with a little teapot that his grandmother just warmed to the exact right temperature, and he would go up, and she couldn't hold the teapot or drink out of it. They would pour the tea from the little spout into her mouth. And so it was natural when my grandmother needed help, she convalesced at our home, and now my mother is convalescing there. So it's part family, it's the Lord. It's, you know,
absolutely.
Oh, that's all I can say. You know, and
absolutely.
Anna has
the, and that's the, yes,
Anna,
yes.
Anna has the voice, you know, and she knows where that voice came from. And, you know, this passion, that's all I can say is, you know, there's just something, you know, I just feel like I hate to think that people are out there in their home doing this every day, washing sheets or doing something that they shouldn't be doing, you know, fighting with their loved one and, you know, hitting their head against the wall because, you know, they don't have the strategies that they could be using, you know, on and on and on. And if I can just help one person, you know, make it easier
absolutely.
On them and make it
absolutely.
Better for the loved one too, then that's my mission. That's my mission.
Absolutely. I think you answered that in that. I believe that's the love of God when you go over and beyond, when you're really not even asked to, and sometimes your own self, even I know probably you go through the same thing. You put yourself on the back burner because you truly want to help someone, and we normally just say, well, whether I'm tired or not tired, someone needs me, and I'm willing to
yeah.
go the extra mile to do that. And I appreciate you and for coming back and being on the show with us, and I'm going to give it back over to Gigi.
Thank you.
Thank you, Aileen, for being here again, and we all really appreciated you, and I'd like to play a song as we close out tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, it's 8:33. We had a very wonderful young lady on our show tonight, Miss Aileen Reese, who is a caregiver herself with www.caregivers.com. Please visit her website. This song was made for a person, for a man with Alzheimer's, and it was written by Harry Gottner. So enjoy as we go out, and may you all have a wonderful, blessed evening. We keep you in our prayers as you keep us in yours, and God bless. Good night, Anna. Good night, Aileen, and a good night, Jay.
Thank you. God
Thank
bless
you
so. All.
Good
Thank
night.
You. Good night.
Open your eyes and tell me what you see. Please say you remember me. In a room where light hides behind the curtains. In a bed where you're lost in a dream. In a time where the world is full of darkness. In a house that doesn't suit quiet. Chocolate in your handbag. Tell me just how much I've grown. me know I'm not alone. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, and remember, you're not alone, and that song was in portion by Harry Gardner, and again, I'd like to thank our special guest, Ms. Aileen Ruth, for being with us tonight. So may you all have a wonderful evening and good night. God bless.